Support for State Week comes from the following sponsors: the Illinois Education Association, Visit Springfield, and PyOrg.
From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Illinois has a new budget, the governor signing that this week. We'll also look at something else the governor wanted that is now law regarding hemp products, and something J.B. Pritzker was unable to get done involving gambling regulation. We'll talk about that and more coming up on this episode of State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield, and our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Professor Emeritus and former Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Charlie's also been a longtime reporter and observer. And our guest this week, making his first appearance on the show with us, Mitch Armantrout. He's a state government reporter with the Chicago Sun-Times. Mitch, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me. Really excited to be here.
Let me quickly touch on the state budget, because we have talked about it quite a bit on the show after it was passed in the wee hours of the spring session. The governor now has signed that. It will take effect July 1st. Mitch, what are the main things that people ought to know about this budget?
I think the biggest thing to know is that this is really a status quo budget. We heard the governor and the legislative leaders talk a lot about the economic uncertainty that they say Illinois is facing under President Donald Trump. So really not rocking the boat very much, increases in spending, mostly tied to inflation. There's a few new taxes in here that are definitely going to face some court challenges. The governor trying to ding big social media companies like Facebook, TikTok, who will be charged I believe it's a quarter for every user beyond 100,000. So the state is banking on $200 million in the upcoming fiscal year from that, which is great. Chicago is the only other local government that's instituted such a tax. And they've also gotten higher than expected returns from that. The only problem is that it's also facing a court challenge from big tech companies who don't want to see this kind of tax spread elsewhere. So we'll see if it stands up. The governor says he thinks it will. So really, the biggest thing for the average resident to know is, lawmakers did not want to increase taxes on the average resident. And they were basically able to accomplish that. So they say that most of the increased taxes are going to be hitting big businesses. We'll see how that works out.
Charlie, I know Republicans weren't happy with the budget, though. They were quick to criticize again once the governor signed this. But we've talked about it. You pointed out you thought this is a pretty austere budget for the state.
Yeah, I think it is. It's, as Mitch said, it doesn't have any new taxes that would fall on individuals. And as a matter of fact, it's got a couple of minor tax breaks, if you will, for individuals. One is that there's a six-month pause on a increase in the per gallon gasoline tax. It would have gone up by slightly more than a penny on July 1st. And now this is being delayed for 6 months. It also includes a 10-day sales tax holiday from August 7th to August 16th for back-to-school shoppers. It probably the single largest programmatic increase is the additional money for the education-based formula. I believe it's $350 million new dollars. That does not come anywhere near what the education lobby wanted. They were arguing that according to the formula, they're entitled to $1 billion more, but there was no way that was going to pass. One of the things that I thought was sort of ironic is that the budget that the governor signed includes using, I guess you would call it a windfall, from the state sales tax on gasoline because of the higher gas prices, because of the war in Iran and other factors. the state collects a separate 6.25% sales tax on gas, and $150 million of that unexpected surplus is going to go into the state's operating budget. Otherwise, it would go to mass transit. But for this particular budget year, it's going to go into basically general expenses. One of the things that I also found kind of interesting, and Mitch, you and Sean both mentioned how this got passed in the wee hours, I guess, of what it would have been June 1st, as a matter of fact, shortly before dawn when this thing went through. And the fact that it was kind of rushed, there were some, if you will, typographical errors in it, and one of which the governor used in a mandatory veto and a line item veto. And it was the budget included more than $500 billion in spending, which would be roughly 10 times the entire operating budget. And it would have allocated this $500 billion in approved spending for a grant to the Chicago West Side Branch NAACP for operating expenses. So that got line itemed out. But as I say, it was sort of indicative of the way this thing got rushed through right at the tail end of the session.
I was going to say, that's a pretty good lobbyist that can get that done. So again, we'll be talking about the finances of the state, as we always do, over the next many months. But let's move on to some other things that have occurred. The governor also signing into law some hemp regulations. This is made to target certain products. And for those that haven't really followed this issue as closely, Mitch, tell us what this is aimed at doing and what will it do?
Right. So this is taking aim at these products you probably have seen in gas stations or convenience stores or, smoke shops, Delta 8 and other hemp-derived THC products. And, you know, these are vapes. These are edibles like gummies. These are things that you can cook in food. They're lotions. Basically, all the different forms that you can ingest marijuana, you can ingest Delta 8, Delta 9, which are basically, they affect you the same way as weed does, but for very technical chemical reasons, they aren't. Because back in 2018, there was this federal law that was passed that created this loophole that allowed basically chemists to take hemp, which has a lot of industrial uses, for textiles and things. This law kind of created an opening for folks to extract chemicals from within the hemp plants that can then be used to basically replicate the effects of marijuana. And that kind of created this entire industry that we've seen really proliferate in Illinois. It's an estimated almost $1 billion industry that has evolved over the last 8 years. It's created a lot of jobs. The only problem is that it's completely unregulated, untested, because it's technically not marijuana. It hasn't faced sort of the stringent licensing and vetting processes that weed companies have faced since that became legal in Illinois back in 2020. So really, this has been a huge push and pull for the last several years. Between this sort of burgeoning hemp industry and Illinois' very large corporate weed industry, who they basically all along been saying, hey, we have to pay these huge licensing fees. It takes years to get these licenses. It's no fair that these guys show up and through a loophole, anybody can start selling Delta 8 at a convenience store. Another concern here is that, in some instances, these Delta 8 products have sort of been packaged as, they could be made to look like Twizzlers or Skittles. There's this kind of candy look-alike packaging that seems to be geared towards kids. Again, it's been completely unregulated. So anyone, any age can walk up to the gas station and a store owner with certain moral convictions, kids can very easily get their hands on this.
And when does this take effect?
Right. So now what the law that finally passed here at the end of session it institutes that age requirement immediately, 21 years of age to purchase these products. And eventually, these hemp products are going to be phased out. There's a federal ban that was sort of tacked on to that was instituted last fall that basically will wipe out the industry, barring further congressional action, in November of this year. And that's when these hemp companies will be, they can, if they want to stay in business, essentially they'll have to go through the same licensing processes as the weed companies do. Now, again, we're talking about a billion-dollar industry in the hemp side. We've got a lot of folks who are worried about losing jobs and essentially being outlawed. But barring any congressional action, you know, it's sort of moot at the state level, which, again, this really would have been a much bigger, if they had passed this bill last year, you know, this was a really hot topic. That federal ban really sort of undercut a lot of the hemp arguments. So yeah, it's going to be a new day this November. And sort of, it seems like that debate is finally settled, one that we've obviously been watching for several years now.
Charlie, that's like Mitch said there, it's the federal ban. Maybe that's what helped pass it in the state finally, was the fact that the feds had already weighed in and put this ban, a federal ban, in place starting later in the year. So maybe it wasn't as much of a fight here in Illinois as it could have been.
No, and it was an issue that, as a matter of fact, the governor was very unhappy when in the fall session, his measure to do this was sidelined, and that led to some hard feelings between legislators and the governor. So now it's finally been approved, and part of it is we are basically modifying our law to reflect what the new federal regulation is, basically banning hemp intoxicating products. Now, hemp is basically, it comes from the same plant as marijuana. And as a matter of fact, if you go back, I guess, more than a century, one of the reasons that hemp or marijuana was first outlawed was because hemp grows more easily than cotton, and it has more versatile uses than cotton. And Southern U.S. senators were very concerned about the cotton industry, and it was going to get supplanted by hemp. So they passed this this legislation outlawing hemp and marijuana, and they did it with, I don't know if you ever heard of a propaganda film called Reefer Madness, but it was about how dangerous pot was. And so that was kind of the background for it. And now Illinois allows recreational use, as do many other states. It also allows medicinal use with fewer regulations in terms of who can sell it. And so we're sort of adjusting our law to what the federal government says. And I think what Mitch suggested, an important part of this was to strike down this advertising that targets minors, packaging that resembles candy, for example. And that was one of the things that was behind Pritzker's push to regulate this stuff. So we'll see how it goes going forward, what impact it might have, and whether it really is a job killer, as the hemp industry argues.
All right. Well, we'll talk more here on State Week coming up in just a moment.
Support for State Week comes from the members of the Illinois Education Association, serving 135,000 members of educators and support professionals around Illinois. IEA's mission is to promote excellence and equity in public education. When schools and communities unite, we all win. Resources and membership information at ieanea.org.
We're back on State Week. Our guest this week is Mitch Armantrout. He's with the Chicago Sun-Times, covers state government for the newspaper. And when we talk about what the governor had gotten accomplished this spring, we also want to point out some things he didn't get accomplished. And Mitch, you wrote about one of these. It has to do with the gambling industry in the state and regulation of that industry. What was the governor looking for, and why didn't it pass?
The so one item that the governor proposed along with his budget back in February was this idea of merging the Illinois Gaming Board with the Illinois Racing Board under sort of a new Department of Gaming regulation and enforcement. The Gaming Board has a huge jurisdiction. It's a perennially understaffed agency. You know, they're in charge of the state's, I believe we're now up to 17 casinos, if you're counting the racetrack downstate. And on top of almost 50,000 slot machines that you see in gas stations, restaurants, and bars, on top of sports betting. So a lot of ground to cover there. While you've got the Racing Board, which, you know, Illinois is the struggles of the Illinois horse racing industry have been well documented. They're down to two tracks. There's Hawthorne near Chicago, which is going through bankruptcy right now, and also Fairmount down in Collinsville. Those are the only tracks left. So, you know, this is an idea that's been batted around for a long time, this idea of just merging the two gambling regulation agencies. The idea previously was to add these to the Department of Revenue, since, you know, these agencies, a big part of their job is counting the money that is being thrown into machines and being bet. The concerns that were raised, though, with Governor Pritzker's idea was that, you know, the Gaming Board and the Racing Board, they both hold monthly public meetings where you or I or any member of the public can go and observe the decisions that they're making, can make public comments, you know, and that's how a lot of us members in the media learn about things that are going on, disciplinary cases that are, you know, being investigated as it pertains to, you know, really valuable gambling licenses. And this is an industry that, as Charlie can tell you, has historic ties to organized crime. So there's, you know, I think I'm obviously a little biased here as a reporter, but I think there's a real sincere public interest in, you know, having access to those meetings and just being able to keep tabs on what's going on. The proposal from the governor would have basically taken a lot of those discussions, put it behind closed doors, basically as a branch of his executive branch, you know, his executive branch. This is, you know, this is something that my colleague and Bob Hergeth and I wrote about sort of after the proposal was made. And yeah, we talked to a lot of lawmakers who shared similar concerns. You know, I think everyone agrees that these regulations, you know, these agencies can certainly be streamlined, but they want to find a better way to sort of maintain transparency. So that did, this proposal did not make it through the commission, but it's something that I think lawmakers said they'll keep on thinking about, probably take into the fall session.
Yeah, Charlie, gaming is one of those things in the state that it's a strange one because, yes, it has to be regulated, but the state relies on revenue from it as well. So the state has a vested interest in keeping these operations functioning and hopefully functioning above board. But what is your thoughts with this? Do you see this as a big deal that of what the governor wants to do? Will it improve things in some way, or do you think that's not the case?
Well, I think it's misguided on the governor's part. And his argument is that we would be able to save money, it would be more expedient, and be more streamlined to combine these two regulatory agencies and basically create a new department. But I share Mitch's concern as a, I guess I still consider myself a reporter at heart. Those kinds of decisions need to be made out in the open. That kind of debate among the committee members or the representatives, the appointed representative, and the gambling license, disciplinary matters, those kinds of things should be done out in the open and not be done by bureaucrats who then will issue an announcement or a press release. Oh, we decided that Charlie Wheeler is not going to get a license because of XYZ. So I think it's very important that those meetings, those decisions be made in public. Now, the governor didn't get his way this past session, but lawmakers have said that they could take a look at this topic again during their fall veto session, or even maybe next year. And it's basically, it's going to require some negotiation between the governor and the legislature to figure out a way. Maybe we can get a little more efficiency in terms of this administration, but without losing the public access to what's going on.
All right, we'll be back with more in a moment.
Support for State Week comes from PIORG, a nonprofit consulting firm providing resources for strategic planning, best practice implementation, and outcomes-focused program evaluation across the country, helping organizations make data understandable and actionable, enabling change makers to strengthen critical skills and serve others more effectively. PI, Plan, Implement, Evaluate. Services and information at PIORG.org.
This is State Week, and a lot of people who follow our guest, Mitch Armantrout, they may read him covering state government. He does that a lot. He also dabbles in covering the Chicago White Sox, gets a little bit of a dual beat there at times. And Mitch, we were just talking about the White Sox before the show. They're having a much better season, of course, but I haven't heard much recently about the effort to get the team a new stadium. That is something that Jerry Reinsdorf, the owner, has pushed for a long time. Of course, the Bears are using up all the oxygen in the room right now with a discussion about where they're going to play in the future. But the White Sox, is a new stadium still on the agenda for them?
You know, that's a great question, Sean. I can tell you, you know, Jerry Reinsdorf is definitely still making his pitch to, you know, get the Sox some help building a stadium. He really wants to do it on the site that you've talked a lot about, probably. It's called the 78 in the South Loop. It's one of the only undeveloped parcels left in Chicago. Beautiful view of the skyline, south of the skyline, on the river. Like, it really is a dazzling spot. The problem is that Mr. Reinsdorf is asking for upwards of $1 billion in public money to that happen. That pitch didn't really go anywhere a couple of years back, but he went back down to Springfield during the spring session. By all accounts, you know, it was mostly the same pitch as far as like seeking an extension of the state, basically extending state bonds to help them finance that project. Was kind of politely told again by State Representative Cam Buckner and others who are really big in stadium negotiations that it's probably not going to happen. But yeah, I think for the most part, it's kind of waiting for the Sox. Like you said, the Bears are just picking up all the oxygen. The Indiana flirtation is kind of an overdrive. You can put whatever amount of stock in that as you're comfortable doing. You know, they still haven't actually picked out a specific site in Indiana where they say their focus is. Those talks with the governor's office and legislative leaders are, everyone says that, you know, that those are supposed to continue over the summer. Maybe they can figure something out in November in Springfield. But yesterday, you know, we heard from the governor. He basically said, the ball is in the Bears' court. They need to tell us what they want, if they want to do it here, and we got to try and, you know, figure something out if it can happen. Obviously, the end of session was you know, a real sprint to the finish there. We saw the initial idea of a bill with pilot legislation kind of crumbled at the last second. And then we saw Bill Cunningham's Hail Mary pitch for municipal stadium financing authorities. That did not get picked up by the House. So I think, you know, just like we are all in a holding pattern waiting to see what the Bears do next, I think Jerry Reinsdorf and, you know, Justin Ishbia is no small player in this. He's the sort of chairman in waiting for the White Sox, a billionaire in his own right who would really love to have a stadium under construction in the South Loop. But yeah, for now it seems like everyone's just kind of waiting to see what the Bears end up getting and where they'll get it.
And Charlie, you go back to the last time that the White Sox got a new stadium and the effort in the state legislature for that. Is this a situation, do you think, where the Bears and the White Sox, all of this could be worked out at one time, maybe even one piece of legislation, or is that not likely?
I don't think that's likely, because I think the Bears situation is going to have to get resolved before the White Sox ballpark into the South Loop. And I think it's when Mr. is that how you pronounce his name? Ishbia?
Yes.
When he becomes a full managing operator, because I believe he does own some of that land in the South Loop. And they could build a park there. It would be a beautiful locale. And I have to say, as a longtime Sox fan, I'm experiencing kind of deja vu. When I was growing up in the 50s, the White Sox would start out really well, then they'd go to New York and get clobbered, and that'd be the end of it. And so I'm thinking they got clobbered in their first game in New York. They got really blown out, and I'm thinking, oh, no, here we go again. So we'll see.
And just about 30 seconds here, Mitch, maybe you could fill this in. There's a bill on the governor's desk that is pretty interesting. This has to do, it would be the first, I guess, in the nation if it's approved, has to do with the smart glasses that are AI-powered for drivers. I'm not familiar with those that much, and why is this a concern?
Yeah, you know, I wasn't terribly familiar with them either, but, you know, we hear some things about, like, Google Glass, and, like, there's these special Ray-Bans now where you can essentially, like, take video with your glasses or watch videos. You can text messages on there. And Secretary of State Alexi Janulius pushed a bill through that basically adds those to the list of electronic devices that you can't use while you're driving. The idea here being to kind of crack down on distracted driving. I think, you know, we all see folks on their cell phones all the time, way too often when they're driving. And the Secretary of State says there's a growing number of folks wearing these very fancy glasses. But now, you know, this bill is awaiting the governor's signature. Doesn't seem like a terribly controversial bill. This was unanimously approved. But soon, you'll probably be facing a ticket if you get caught driving with these fancy glasses. Mm-hmm. Oh, the officers can actually spot that they are indeed smart glasses. I think that is, we'll see how that works out.
Let me move on to our notes from the field. And Charlie, let's go to you first this week.
Well, there was a suit filed, I think it was last week, in which disability advocates and patients are suing to block the law that would allow medical aid in dying, as it's called, the assisted suicide law, which is set to go into effect in September, is being sued in federal court in Illinois, and it's also being sued in other courts. And the allegations brought by medical advocacy groups and disabled Illinoisans is that the law discriminates against people with disabilities and lacks significant safeguards or oversight. And we'll see how this plays out.
That's all the time we have for this episode of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler and Mitch Armantrout with the Chicago Sun-Times. Look for State Week where you get your podcasts through the NPR app and at nprillinois.org. I'm Sean Crawford. Join us next time.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.
Support for State Week comes from Visit Springfield, featuring dozens of attractions and overnights on Route 66 in the capital city. Springfield is home to numerous Lincoln sites, Frank Lloyd Wright's Dana Thomas House, the Illinois State Capitol, and more. The Visit Springfield team can help organizers plan their event in the capital city. Attractions and tourism information at visitspringfieldillinois.com.